and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today, our topic is going to be nitrogen for soybeans. We get a lot of questions. People look at the fertilizer removal app that we have, or, you know, you talk to any university and you go, wow, soybeans really need 5.5 pounds of nitrogen for every one bushel? That's a lot. If I was going to raise 100 bushel soybeans someday, that'd be 550 pounds of nitrogen. Can the plant actually produce all of that by itself? I seriously doubt it, Darren.
No, I don't think the plant can produce all of it by itself, and that's been shown. But the key is, how do you get the plant to produce more by itself?
Yep. So those are some of the things we're going to talk about today, and how much you need to supply that plant with additional nitrogen to get the yield you're after. As always, we would be happy to take your phone call if you want to call into our show at any point today. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today. And Darren, do you want to start out talking nitrogen for soybeans, or do you have anything else pressing?
I don't know. There's lots of things going on, but let's start with the topic at hand, nitrogen for soybeans. You know, for me, it comes down to, how do I get that soybean to produce as much as it possibly can? Because I don't want to have a whole bunch of carryover N out in my field and risk losing that. And nitrogen's not cheap. So
if I can spend
a few bucks on inoculant, I like that much better than, you know, tens of dollars on applied nitrogen.
Okay, but what you said there was you don't like putting a whole bunch out because you're worried about losing it.
No. I said I don't want to have a whole bunch of extra from my corn or my wheat or something like that.
No,
left.
Nobody does. But by the same token, if you don't have enough to feed the plant, then you've got a yield issue too. So usually after corn or wheat, if you're doing a good job with nitrogen fertility, you probably are still going to have 20 to 40 pounds left. You're going to have a little.
Sure, you're going to have a little bit out there. And then if you're putting on a MAP or DAP, you're going to get a little N that way. And you're putting on, you know, another fertilizer blend, you're probably getting a little bit more that way. So there's lots of things. But nodulation starts so early in the season. If you've got a good amount of rhizobia bacteria, a very strong strain, you're applying it at the last minute so you don't have a whole lot of mortality, letting it sit in a bin or a trailer or wherever for a month. Yeah, you're going to get better nodulation. You're going to have more of those nodules close to that main taproot, and that's where you really get the most power. When you see, all right, what about my native rhizobia bacteria? I raise beans in this field every couple of years. You bet. If you didn't have flooding or extreme drought, you probably have some survival of native rhizobia bacteria, but guess where they colonize? Not right around that taproot, because they're all over in the soil. And where is your soybean plant going to be? Who knows? So they're going to end up being out further away from the plant out on some of those laterals, and they just don't seem to be as effective delivering a high amount of nitrogen as those rhizobia that you're putting right in the furrow, or better yet, on the seed.
Yeah, I know, but still, Darren, I mean, let's be real here. Even on 70 bushel soybeans, you're only going to see a 1 to 5 bushel gain from inoculating most of the time. So that tells you that there's a fair amount being produced in the soil. It tells you there's a fair amount of carryover most of the time. And then let's not forget organic matter mineralization. As organic matter mineralizes in the soil, you're going to get, depending on where you're at. I was just in Canada a week ago, and I told those guys maybe 10 to 15 pounds of nitrogen for every 1% of organic matter. Here on my farm, I usually figure in South Dakota, 20 to 30 pounds for every 1%. Well, we've got a bunch of 5% organic matter soils. That's 100 to 150 pounds of free nitrogen I get every single year. It's amazing. So then we get to the real question, and I'm sure as soon as people heard we're going to talk about nitrogen for soybeans today, the question is always, well, if I apply some nitrogen in season, will that boost my yield?
It may, if nitrogen's your yield-limiting factor. And that's the real key, is trying to figure out what is the yield-limiting factor on your farm. Now, let's say that you are short in nitrogen, and this happens a lot once you're above 80 bushel beans, for sure. But it could happen anywhere. Maybe you've got flooding. Maybe you've had drought. Those types of things where you're not getting enough production out of your soybeans. Yeah, you could have some real issues there. And getting more nitrogen out there, that could definitely help you. So the trick, Brian, is how do you know when? And
Well, you don't know getting when, it
out
but
there. You want to have it out there for those reproductive stages, and for sure later in the reproductive stages. But if you do plant tissue analysis, normally in the vegetative stages, we don't see much for deficiencies.
But keep in mind, with plant tissue analysis, that tells us how we're doing today. That is not predictive. That does not tell us, well, in three days, you're going to run short on nitrogen.
It's a snapshot.
Let's keep that in mind. Okay, but anyway, here's the number one factor that I usually tell people about. I say, look, if you've got low organic matter soils, now obviously you have to be shooting for a high yield goal or nitrogen probably isn't going to pay. But if you have low organic matter, that means you're not going to get a lot of free release of nitrogen out of the soil. So if that nitrogen isn't going to, in effect, get applied by your soil, if you see where I'm going with this, you will have to apply some if you're going for really high yield goals. And the biggest way to determine this that we would suggest to you is just try some stuff out on your farm. Run some trials yourself and try some crazy things. Maybe even try 150 pounds, in a few strips and just see what happens.
Well, another thing too that happens, Brian, is there's fall fertility that goes out and guys think that a field's going to be corn and all of a sudden it becomes a bean field next year for one reason or the next. And then the question is, well, did it get you more yield, putting all that fertility out there?
No. The question is that going to give me lazy nodules or lazy soybeans? I've heard it phrased a number of different ways. I just had that question last week from a guy, and I said, look, who cares? I don't care if the plant's lazy or not. Of course, anybody's going to be lazy when they can be. Any plant's going to be lazy when they can be. If there's a bunch of nitrogen there, why would the plant use its own energy to kick sugars out into the soil to attract bacteria to create nodules when there's a bunch of nitrogen there? But I said, how much nitrogen did you put out already for this corn that now you're going to do beans? And he goes, well, like 100 pounds. I go, what's your yield goal? I don't know, like 50, 60 bushel beans. And I go, well, you're not even close to as much nitrogen as you need. Don't even worry about it. We've put on 2-3 times that much nitrogen before, and we've had fantastic yields. You're going to be fine.
We're going to talk about this nitrogen on soybeans topic on today's program. Also taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or if you want to send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tired of having to babysit your grain bins, waiting to manually turn on fans until the weather's just right? Have you ever kicked yourself for losing an opportunity to better manage your stored grain? Operating the fans on your bins just got a lot easier with the Steps GMS app. The Steps GMS temperature humidity switch is a low-cost solution that allows you to operate bin fans according to your specifications. For more information, find us on Twitter at StepsGMS or visit us at StepsGMS.com.
Commodity Classic is the place to boost your bottom line.
We're all in business to make money, you know, and you want to succeed at your job. You come here, you're able to take this information and become more profitable from seed to fertilizer to equipment, everything.
Join thousands of your fellow farmers at Commodity Classic, America's largest farmer-led, farmer-focused educational and agricultural experience, February 28th through March 2nd in Orlando. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contans No Risk Guarantee. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
BASF presents 5 things to do after harvest. Number 5, feel what it's like to not have boots on your feet. Number 4, remember that your daughter is in 3rd grade, not 4th. Number 3, get the hum of the grain dryer out of your head. Number 2, eat breakfast while sitting down. And number 1, analyze your results and plan for next year. From all of us at BASF to growers everywhere, thanks for all your hard work during Harvest 18. Grow smart with BASF. We create chemistry.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Talking about nitrogen on soybeans and high-yielding soybeans. When you get a lot of soybeans, Well, then you got another problem, and it's called marketing. That's why we turned to Grain PhD and try and get more information. And it's a free tool for you to use at grainphd.com. We got Scott Harms with us right now with Grain PhD. Scott, how's it going today?
It's going well, Darren.
All right, so what's happening now in the markets? Everybody's super busy on harvest and maybe not paying attention as much as we should be.
Yeah, it's been kind of a up and down week this week. We had some strength early in the week, and then we've had some weakness here the past few days. Overall, we had a move higher last week after the USDA report. Didn't get fresh bearish information for the market to chew on, so we saw a little bit of a bounce as the funds moved away from short positions, and we also found some support from some of the poor harvest conditions, especially out west. There's definitely seems to be a sentiment in the trade that the yield estimates going forward, especially in November, especially in corn, are going to be lower as we move forward, especially into November. So a little more buying power seems to pop into the market. The soybeans got the positive news on Monday with a couple cargoes were announced when they did the announced the export commitments. A couple cargoes of beans were set to go to China. So the market rallied 20 cents, and then it was found out later that those were sales were made before the tariff, so it didn't carry through. It didn't have the excitement level to carry prices a lot higher than today. Export numbers were pretty pathetic for corn and soybeans and disappointing to the trade. So we see things under pressure, but a lot of chop in the market. This is a kind of time frame where the market, we're in between reports. We don't have a lot of market information, fresh market information. So we tend to overreact to little things. And so there'll be some pretty choppy trade here for a little bit.
Yeah, overreacting is definitely one thing that we see in the market this time of year. So what kind of questions are you getting from farmers and what topics are really fresh on their minds?
Well, we've had a lot of discussions. Again, we're going to see some chop here, and this is a classic situation of, take what the market gives you. You know, we've got a lot of guys that are focused on, trying to get some re-ownership strategy in. They've overproduced their storage, and or they have to let go of some either beans or corn at lower prices than they want to. So their focus is on getting that re-owned with futures and options. And then we've got others that are looking at 2019 sales, and some of those guys are the same customer. It really is a function of being ready. We saw strength earlier this week. We started our 2019 program with some small sales, able to get some off here earlier this week. But now with the market down, our attention is turning right back to, at what level do we want to get, some kind of re-ownership strategy in place. So, this is not the place or time to be chasing rallies higher. There's not a big move likely coming. At the same time, it's not the right time to be panic and selling into breaks. Breaks are going to be bought, sales are going to be sold, rallies are going to be sold. You need to get some planning in place and have some real conservative orders out there and just wait for the market to come to you.
Yeah, 2019 is interesting already, no doubt about that. I haven't talked to a lot of farmers that are jumping all over it. In fact, I was talking to a group of non-farmers today, and their question for me was, the market conditions don't look great right now. How do you justify not just renting the ground out? And I thought, wow, these people are definitely not farmers if they're going to ask a question like that. We're definitely going to raise a crop. Do you see momentum swinging the acres more one way or the other? In our area, we hear a lot of guys saying, I'm going to probably back off on soybeans a little bit, probably a little heavier on corn and on wheat.
Yeah, farmers farm, and that's, they're going to be out there farming. There's going to be some subtle changes, and I don't think there's any question, at least as the outlook looks today, and a lot of things can change by the time planning decisions are made, are finalized, but as it looks today, there'll be a pretty large shift towards corn. The outlook looks greater in that area. If South America produces a big crop of beans, given that carryover estimate we're currently working with, it's a lot more difficult to paint a real bullish scenario to soybeans. But it really is about putting pencil to paper, and the GrainBridge software that's offered through Grain PhD is a great place to start, and you can change those numbers and move those numbers as the price changes and see what pencils in the best, rather than trying to guess or figure out. But the prices are going to, there's a lot of things in play this winter with South American weather the trade issues, which we have not been nothing but depressing prices of late, one day we'll probably get some positive news in that direction, and that's just going to change opinion. So as it looks today, it may lean towards heavily planting corn, but if people are able to pencil in a profit for beans, especially high-yielding beans, you know, as they come off of a good year this year, if they can pull that off again next year, then that break-even is going to be a lot lower. It may make sense for beans. So it's obviously in flux, but I think the important thing is to have it, you know, have some targets down, you know, and have use this GrainBridge software, because all these parts are going to be moving, and it'll move along with you and identify, you know, at what profit, what levels you're going to be profitable, and what level you want your profitability, the return on your operation.
You know, I think a lot of the questions that Brian and I get are around, how do you manage all these things? What software are you using? And you're right, the GrainBridge software that you can get for free at grainphd.com is a great way to manage the finances around your grain operation, for sure. When we talk about re-owning this year's fall sales, what do you see for potential with this? I mean, I hear a lot of guys talking about this. Yeah, I'm selling some, but I don't like this price level. I'm re-owning it on the board, or I'm buying some options, these kinds of things. What kind of potential do you think we have?
Well, I think longer term, you have so many more things in play. If you're looking at setting up an option strategy where you get coverage out to, you know, the April-May timeframe, there's so many things that can happen. It's really difficult to predict what the upside is. That's more of a longer-term play. As far as short-term, we're not going to see major price moves. You have to keep your expectations somewhat limited. If you invest in an option, you know, say you spend 7 to 10 cents, expect to make, you know, 10 to 15 cents on that, and step aside and, you know, add that to your bottom line. Keep it in the short term, if you're looking at re-ownership strategies, keep your expectations somewhat minimal. On the longer term, it's just like re-owning it in paper and owning it in the bin. You've replaced it, and you're going to be subject to what is coming down the pike. But, you know, we've got a balance sheet in corn that has gotten a lot more loose through this year's crop. But it wasn't too many months ago we were talking about a 1.5 billion bushel carryover and maybe slippage down to a billion bushel, and that meant some really real good price potential. And with the South American weather problem, if they can't get things corrected down there, and they're going to plant a lot of beans because China's their big, they've got a big customer now, so they're going to be planting less corn in those areas. And if they have any kind of problems at all, we could get back to a somewhat, you know, tighter balance sheet pretty quickly. So the upside, I think, is, you know, can be, you know, quite a lot.
Any other topics, Scott, that are coming up right now in the grain discussion?
Again, I think most of it right now is because of the sideways choppy pattern. Most of it is on the re-ownership strategies. I think those are the main keys. This is the time where, you know, producers are not thinking that much about marketing. Hopefully in the next, once the combines get put away and the bin doors get shut tight, you know, they'll be sitting down with marketing meetings. They really need to be getting a plan for next year. Margins just continue to get tighter and tighter, and it's important to have a handle on those costs and those expectations. So, you know, we, at Grain PhD are, willing to, talk with anyone that wants to advance their marketing expertise. And, we've got a live webinar coming up with Grain PhD on November 6th at 7 o'clock. Farmers can attend the webinar and learn how to master the GrainBridge software, as well as learn a little bit about marketing strategies. And it's an interactive webinar, so questions are going to be welcome.
Awesome.
They can sign up at grainphd.com.
Well, Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. And for everyone listening, I just encourage you again, visit grainphd.com when you get a minute. Take a look at some of the free resources there to help you make more money on your grain marketing. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about nitrogen for soybeans. We know that soybeans need nitrogen. The question is, will I make any money? Will I make more yield putting nitrogen on beans? And there's certainly a lot of questions that you have to answer, first of all, to know when and where you'll need to put on nitrogen. So we got our friend Rob Dedman. He's a crop consultant down in the state of Arkansas. Works with growers raising some pretty substantial soybeans, often in excess of 100 bushels per acre down there. Rob, when you're raising high-yield beans like that, that really changes the game on nitrogen, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it really does. I feel like nitrogen is in the high-yielding soybeans can be a key component.
You know, when we're looking at, say, 40 bushel beans, soybeans are producing quite a bit of their own. There's generally a little carryover from a previous crop. Maybe it's corn or wheat. And you've got some mineralization going on out there. We just, on our farm, have never noticed that we needed more nitrogen. But now that we're raising 70 and 80 bushel beans, still trying to catch up to what you're doing down in Arkansas, but 70 and 80 bushel beans, nitrogen can start to get a little bit limiting for us. We don't have enough carryover, and our soils just aren't giving us enough for free. Where do you start looking to see if a grower you're working with needs it? Is it soil type and how much organic matter they have, or is it crop rotation? What's important to you?
All of the above. Actually, Darren, it's I look at on these soils that we have down here in the Delta, you know, they're really low CEC soils. They're real sandy. And so their ability to hold residual nitrogen can be kind of low. Although, I think we probably don't do as good a job managing our nitrogen in our corn as people in the Midwest do. So we probably have more nitrogen in our corn per bushel than we really need. So therefore, we create a situation that we have some residual nitrogen. I think that goes a long way toward our higher yields in our soybeans, because we typically will rotate in behind corn or cotton into soybean. So in the Midwest, up where you guys are at and all, it's you're way more efficient with the nitrogen in your corn, so therefore you're leaving less for the soybeans. But once you exceed that 70 to 80 bushel yield, I think that nitrogen becomes a very serious limiting factor.
All right, when you talk about nitrogen, everything that I read and anything that I've seen work in the field has been late. Is it typically just in the reproductive phases where you see a gain where you're at, or do you see some gain getting some out there early?
You know, we've had situations before where we'll take a field and it hasn't been in soybeans in several years. Say it's in an old cotton field, and we take it out of cotton and we put it into soybeans. And really early, right off the bat, you'll see those beans, they'll not produce nodules like they should. So what we'll have to do is early sometimes, and it's not real common, but we'll come in there and we'll put a little light rate of nitrogen and just kind of jump start them a little bit and keep them going until they start producing nodules and fixing their own nitrogen. And then the biggest benefit I think I see is later on in that R3 to R5 stage, is, you know, because we go early, I feel like we'll get too much vegetative growth down here.
Yep.
And we'll get a real viney plant that's going to lay down on us.
Do you see any difference with determinate plant versus indeterminate?
You know, we're so heavy in the indeterminates down here. We just don't have very many determinants. So, you know, I think that the indeterminates are, in my opinion, are way more responsive. That's where we get our yields at.
Okay. And what about with inoculant? We have a lot of guys in our area that, if they've got ground that hasn't been in soybeans for a while, they'll double inoculate. And I've talked to some super high-yielding producers elsewhere, and double inoculation sounds like a normal thing for them. Do you run with inoculant? Do you do it on seed? Do you do it in furrow? What are you recommending?
You know, I like it on the seed when I can, as a seed coat. I like inoculant. And any time that I really want to push for yield, my number one goal is to eliminate all the questions, eliminate all the possibilities, and you know, are we possibly running short on rhizobium bacteria? Inoculate it, then we know we're not. We've double inoculated some before trying that. I didn't really see a benefit there, but this year we actually didn't inoculate our bean, and had one of the better bean yields that we've had. So, you know, it's kind of I think you better inoculate where you need to inoculate. I'm not going to sit here and say that we need to inoculate every acre every year.
Okay, what about micronutrients? Things like boron and molybdenum. We hear a lot of talk about them being so key to nitrogen utilization in the plant. Do you do a lot with molybdenum and boron, and what do you think for most farmers across the country? Is this something they should be looking at?
You know, definitely boron. Boron helps us set more pods, so we need to keep those boron levels up. Keep those boron levels up where they need to be at.
What do you look for, Rob? So talk about that boron. What do you like to see on a test? Are you looking for a couple of parts per million, or is there a different number that you'd shoot for?
You know, a couple parts per million. I like to keep that in the I like to keep it in that sufficient range. I really believe we can hurt ourselves if we get much above that, you know, that sufficient range for your crop that you're looking at, especially on soybeans. And there is some work showing where boron can be toxic to soybeans if we get it too high. So I'm not really wanting to get it excessive, but I do want to keep it on the upper end of the sufficiency range.
Yeah, my brother's a big fan of boron, and I've noticed our rates keep creeping up each year here. And I'm wondering, we've seen a response on corn, And that's a good thing, but we really aren't extracting that much boron. And in our heavy soils, I'm kind of wondering what the response is going to be on soybeans too. But I guess if we can push our yield levels up there so we're drawing more out of the soil, that could be a key for us as well.
That's true. I think you can, you know, and boron and moly both, you know, along with all of our micros. And one that I key in on is sulfur. I feel like sometimes we don't put enough sulfur out. And we really kind of elevated some of our sulfur levels over the last couple of years, and I feel like we're seeing a positive response.
Yeah, the sulfur has been a big one for us as well. We're trying to build sulfur levels as we've looked at some of our yield response we've had across the farm. We've got higher levels of sulfur. We do have a little bit more yield. Now, there are some other factors, too. That's always the tricky part about looking at soil tests that, well, this one, it's more yield where we have sulfur, but we also had more potassium in those areas, too. So how much was just the sulfur, I don't know, but I do know this. We're trying to get more in our fields every year. One last quick thing I want to get back to here, Rob. You mentioned plant height, that if you had too much N early, sometimes those plants just get really tall. What are you doing? In your area, you guys have so much more trouble with this of plants getting really big than we do as you go further north in the Midwest. Are there some things that you found to help keep plant height a little bit shorter?
You know, go against the grain, plant them a little bit earlier is about the only thing that I've seen shorten them up some. And we had some really early beans this year, and we're going to have some even earlier beans next year. And they weren't as short. I mean, we kept them standing, but, you know, they were probably better than waist tall. You know, I like a bean to be waist tall, but these were between waist and armpit tall, you know, so 4 to 5 foot tall on these. And they just get tall, but we plant them early. It seems like we can shorten them up just a little bit.
Been talking with Rob Dedman. He's a crop consultant down in the state of Arkansas and actually deals with farmers all over and just does such a great job on soybeans. Real thankful to have you on the show today, Rob. Thanks for sharing the information and good luck here the rest of this fall.
My pleasure as always. Thank you.
We're talking about nitrogen in soybeans and other ideas you may have to push yields. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, and you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back after this.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush.
That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Avoid dry run failures with the new Hypro Force Field Pump. Providing the ultimate protection, this wet seal pump will save you on costly in-season downtime to keep your sprayer running. Now all you have to worry about is the weather. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We've been talking about nitrogen in soybeans, but we're getting a number of questions in here for the Ag PhD mailbag. We're going to jump into some of these mailbag questions here if you're ready to roll with those, Janelle. Not yet, she says. Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk nitrogen a little bit more. Oh, now she says mailbag. Man, I just can't keep her happy today. It's my sister running the controls today, and she's just toying with me, I think, for some reason. So let's go to the mailbag.
It's the mailbag, the mighty mailbag. Ask the questions with glee. It's the mailbag, the mighty mailbag, with Brian and Darren Hefty.
Oh, Brian, it's been a tough day already.
It's the mailbag, the mighty.
Now we're going to do mailbag twice. Oh, boy. All right, we got a first question here from Justin. He said, I'm doing vertical tillage. I'm running 2 inches deep is all with a 0-degree blade angle. And I'm trying to not burn up my organic matter. My question is, how much organic matter do you think I'm burning up? Am I doing a bad thing here?
If that's all he's doing is just this one little, what we call vertical tillage path, basically just coulters, you're not doing a whole lot of damage there. So I'm not that worried about that. Number one, you've left most of the roots in the field intact. That's really where organic matter comes from in the first place. And the second thing is, you know, just look at your soil and look at how much residue is still on top. You've left a lot of residue with just that one pass. So, nope, I'm not too worried about it.
All right. Brian had a question for us. Brian from Minnesota. He said, you talked about a University of Minnesota study that was done about silage and its impacts on organic matter levels in soil. I'm wondering if they included cover crops and if they included manure application. Brian, the answer is no. I don't believe they included either of those. It was simply a question of we're leaving all the plant residue in the field and just harvesting corn, or we're taking all the above ground residue off and harvesting silage. So at that time, cover crops weren't a big deal. And I don't know why they didn't do the manure. I don't believe they did manure anyway on those for the fertility. I think they were using commercial fertility, just maybe easier to measure, easier to apply. I'm not sure. Thanks for the question, though. I get Gordon on the line.
You have to look that up. What we were talking about is the University of Minnesota Morris study. It's like a 30-year study just trying to determine organic matter loss from taking all the above-ground residue off, or at least almost all of it, like when you cut silage. But yeah, you should be able to find that online, I would assume, somewhere.
All right, I've got Gordon on with us right now. He's in the state of Michigan. Gordon, how are you doing today? Yep. Are you there, Gordon?
Question. Sure. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yes, I can.
Okay. Yeah, I was reading an agronomy handbook. I can't think of the author's name right now. I think Neil's either his first name or his last name.
Oh, yeah, probably Neil Kinsey. Was it a green book, Hands-On Agronomy?
That's it. Yep. Thank you. I was reading his chapter on potassium, and he was saying that at a pH of 6.5 or higher, it's quite difficult to build up potassium levels in the soil. I know you guys talk a lot about potassium, and I do agree that as we get our base saturations up to 6% or higher, we have found that especially our soybean yields have gone up quite a bit. But I haven't ever heard you guys talk about that issue of the pH making it difficult to build up potassium levels. So I just wanted to see what you guys would have to say about that.
Yeah, it's a great question, Gordon, and it's something we've actually put into practice on our farm and done some work on. Brian, you want to talk about that, about trying to build K levels in pHs 6.5 and above?
Yeah, we've been able to do it. You bet. We've been able to do it even in pHs higher than 6.5. I mean, I think Neil's main point is you can do it more efficiently if you wanted to use manure or compost, and I would agree with that. But we have been able to do it with commercial fertilizer. It's just unfortunately, you know, if you look at a lot of the high pH soils, typically they are higher cation exchange capacity. So in other words, they're heavier soils. Well, when it's a heavy soil and it's high pH, you know, we got two things going against us. You can build it, but it just takes a little time. So if you can do it with manure or commercial manure or compost, you should be able to do it a little bit quicker and a little bit cheaper. But that's not to say you can't do it at all with commercial fertilizer. We absolutely have done it. At our advanced soils clinics last year, we just showed some of the work that we've done over the last few years just to basically prove that you absolutely can do it even in really heavy ground, really high pH. It takes a lot of K to get you there.
Okay, so it's just a situation where you need more of it than you would at a lower pH.
Yeah, and the deal where, hey, if we're looking at true economics, and if we have access to manure or compost, that would be our preference in the high pH heavy ground as opposed to commercial fertilizer. But if you have to go commercial, just understand it can be done.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Gordon. Really appreciate the question. All right, Brian, we got kind of an interesting question. This one comes from Paul, and he said, I'm wondering if you know of any information about the role of the flag leaf in wild wheat as compared to domesticated wheat. That's an interesting question, Paul. That flag leaf is so critical. And for anyone who doesn't raise wheat, I would say the same thing would be true, like the ear leaf in corn, anything that's that flag leaf on wheat and the upper leaves on corn, because they're catching the most sunlight and converting that into energy for the plant to try and fill that grain out. It's super, super important. I don't know of anything different about a wild wheat versus a domesticated wheat. Do you, Brian?
Nope. No, I don't. I have to assume it's probably relatively similar, but yeah, I really don't know. The other thing that I would think about if I'm thinking wild wheat, maybe it has better disease tolerance, but maybe it has worse. I don't really know. So, you know, let's just take wheat. When we talk wheat, we talk about specific varieties sometimes that, hey, this one has better tolerance or this one has less. When we're just talking about the general category of wild wheat, I have no idea. But yeah, I have to assume the flag leaf is going to be important there just like it is in all other wheat.
All right, got a response in on Twitter about a comment that Rob Deadman had made that he said increased boron levels in soybeans led to more pod set. Wondering, have we seen any of that kind of thing on our farm as we've tried some experiments with boron the last few years?
Well, we've looked at boron. We just haven't really looked at that one all by itself. But I will tell you that every high-yield farmer that we have for our first step spot. So if you come to our Ag PhD field day each year, by the way, you can hear a bunch of really high yield farmers from around the country and even around the world. And I mean, we're talking world record guys that are just doing a phenomenal job. And they have plots they manage all season long on our farm with our research lead. It's awesome. But if you look at what their treatments are, I don't have it right in front of me, but I bet you that every single one of them is adding boron. They're all looking at that. They've all been seeing responses. So that's kind of what I'm going by. We know plants have to have balanced nutrition. The whole key thing here is I don't know how much boron your soil has or your plant has. So adding more may or may not be a benefit for you. You're just going to have to do some of your own testing.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And Rob also talked about sulfur. And I think that's when there's getting to be a lot more research supporting sulfur on soybeans. We're seeing lower levels of sulfur on soil tests. And I know for our farm too, Brian, this is one that in addition to boron, we're looking at sulfur, we're looking at molybdenum, all these nutrients that impact nitrogen utilization and nitrogen efficiency within that plant. They all tend to be big factors for corn and for soybeans. And I know a lot of the high yield growers that we're working with at the Ag PhD field day and then just in our day-to-day work are really focusing on those types of things that can improve our soybean yields and our corn yields. Rob had made the comment too that he thought 2 parts per million of boron is probably a decent level to be at. He was shooting more to be at an acceptable level, or a sufficient level, rather than at an excessive level of boron in soybeans. He was a little more concerned about excess boron in soybeans hurting things than he would be in corn. But I think this is one of the things, Brian, that scares guys away from boron. They hear people say, well, too much boron could kill your crop.
Yeah, but so could too much nitrogen, so could too much water. There are a lot, everything. If it's in excess, it is going to kill your crop. Don't get too worried about it, though. We need some. Just like vitamin D for every human being, we need vitamin D. But you know what? Even a very small amount could kill anybody. So, yeah, it doesn't matter what we're talking about. The dose always makes the poison, but you got to have some dose for a nutritious crop.
All right, we'll get back with more of your calls and questions right after this.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, we're getting into questionnaires from our listeners today. We'd love to hear if you have any questions for us that we could help you with. Our email is radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. And then, of course, you can give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. Brian, getting some questions back to our topic about nitrogen and soybeans. This one comes from Jim in Pennsylvania. He said, do you have a guide in terms of cation exchange capacity levels where you believe nitrogen applications would help us raise higher yielding soybeans? We're currently getting 60 bushel beans now.
No, it's really not cation exchange capacity. What it is organic matter. I'd take a look real hard at the organic matter, and I would just tell you, if you're down below 2% organic matter at that kind of yield level, there's probably a decent chance that a little bit of nitrogen could pay. The timing would most likely be in that kind of R3 stage, if I had to guess, but just understand, at the peak demand for soybeans, which comes at about that, you know, kind of late reproductive stage, or the reproductive stage is late in the season is what I mean, that's when you need the nitrogen, and your soil is going to provide some at 2% organic matter, but boy, it's not going to provide much. So that's what I would look at. And also keep in mind, if you had carryover nitrogen, if you had applied nitrogen, a lot of those things have already been available and used earlier in the season by that soybean plant. So now is when you really need it, once you get to that R3, R4, that kind of stage. And I just look at low organic matter.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Jim. Got one from Bob in Kansas. He said, I'm enjoying your topic, nitrogen use in soybeans. Here's my situation. I've taken some soil tests already this fall, and it shows that I've got quite a bit of carryover nitrate. Some spots will be up even as high as 100 parts per million. I'm wondering a few questions. First of all, will that nitrate still be there in the spring, or should I test again in the spring? Secondly, should I plant corn or sorghum instead? And third, if I do plant soybeans here, will that much carryover nitrate hurt my beans?
Well, the carryover nitrate isn't going to hurt the beans, so I'm not worried about that at all. Is it still going to be there come spring? All depends. So if, let's say, your ground literally freezes up 3 days from now, and then you plant 3 days after the ground thaws in the spring, there's no point in retesting in the spring, that N is still there. But if you've got a while to go before freeze up, you've got a month and a half in the spring after thaw before you plant, then yes, it's very possible you could lose some of that nitrogen. What was the other question?
Should he consider planting corn and sorghum instead of corn or sorghum instead of soybeans?
Yeah, that's up to him. The reason why guys will do it a lot of times is because they say, well, if I've got $100 worth of nitrogen out there, that's worth, let's just call it $30 an acre. Okay, so if I've already got $30 an acre worth of fertilizer for corn, that's not going to help my beans much. Now how does that change the economics? So what I would suggest is, when you're penciling out your corn versus your soybeans, then just basically subtract at least probably $20, $25 off your fertilizer bill, and then see how the numbers look. And if you feel like you should go corn or sorghum or something, that's up to you. But no, having that nitrogen there is not going to hurt your soybeans. Might even help if you were going to run short.
Jeremy in Minnesota's got a question. He said, I'm going to be putting some manure on my ground this fall. I will have enough manure to spread on all my corn acres, but also on some of my soybean acres that I'm planning for 2019. My questions are, when I'm looking at the rate of manure that I'll put on this soybean ground for next year's soybeans, should I dial my rate in based off the nitrogen that's in the manure or based on how many pounds of salt I'll be spreading per acre?
Well, it's both. So what you want to do is say, can I apply enough nitrogen that my soil can still hold it, my crop needs it, all that kind of thing, yet I didn't create a salt issue? So if you say, well, if I put on enough, then I'm going to have too much salt, okay, well, that answers that question.
All right. The other thing that Jeremy had, he said, what about my white mold risk? I've heard from neighbors that have spread manure on ground intended for soybeans that they saw more white mold on those acres. Should I be doing something at this time in the fall, like Contans or another treatment?
Well, the number one factor there is really just soybean variety, because if you could have a short bean, that's a really big deal. That's probably the number one thing, a short bean that has good white mold tolerance. So if you don't have that, if you say, well, I've got a pretty susceptible variety I'm going to plant there, number one, I won't do it. But two, if you have to do it, yeah, you've got a lot of risk. And now I'm going to look at Contans. I'm going to look at extra manganese. I'm going to try to lower the soil pH. I might put on a little bit of Cobra mid-June. I'm going to probably come with two or three shots of fungicide post-emerge. So a lot of those things could potentially go away if you just pick a better variety.
Okay. Derek in Missouri, speaking about soybeans again, he said, the crop consultant you had on your radio program today mentioned plant height concerns. We have the same concerns where I farm in Missouri that sometimes soybeans will get taller than me. So what are some tips you would have for controlling plant height? I know on your show today you mentioned planting earlier in the season. How does that help, and what other things have you tried?
Well, I'll just say this. There are a lot of high-yield growers that are starting to work with plant growth hormones to do that. That's very possible. I just don't know what plant growth hormones are going to help you. But the biggest key is, like I was just talking about, pick a shorter variety. And, you know, something that naturally is going to be short. That's really what we're looking for. That's probably the number one factor. But, yeah, it's tough when you're going to have a fair amount of fertility out there trying to raise really great soybeans, and you have that soil just fine-tuned where the drainage is great, every nutrient is great. You know, if there are no limiting factors, there's no reason those beans can't be 4 to 6 feet tall if it's the right variety. So I still come back to, let's pick a different variety, pick a shorter variety. And then, yeah, hopefully there will be some plant growth hormones that in the future can shorten these plants up. You know, there are some plant growth regulators that are using crops like wheat with some success, products like Palisade. Unfortunately, we haven't really seen that they pan out in soybeans, but who knows? I mean, down the road, yes, it's possible we'll be able to do more of that.
Got a question from Alan in Indiana. He said, we finished corn harvest on some of our land and started pulling soil tests, and my agronomist tells me that my stock quality issues may be from over application of nitrogen. He's also blaming my need for lime on over applying nitrogen. Is he blaming the fertilizer dealer, or is he giving me some good advice?
Well, that is good advice. You've got to be careful with how much nitrogen you're putting out there. We know that nitrate can typically strip out calcium out of that soil. So, I mean, when it leaches. And we also know that too much nitrogen early in the season is going to make the plant excessively tall. So that can cause some problems with lodging later on. So, yeah, he's right on both accounts. Now, the other thing that I would ask you to consider, if your soil will hold all your nitrogen, are you really applying too much nitrogen, or is it just that nitrogen isn't the yield-limiting factor? Well, if nitrogen isn't the yield-limiting factor, why don't you fix the things that are? Maybe you need more potassium or phosphorus or micronutrients, sulfur, you know, those types of things. So, I mean, he's right in a lot of ways, but the problem is if you cut your nitrogen back, well, all of a sudden now nitrogen may be a yield-limiting factor for you, or you've just got to split apply it or something like that to get it out at the time of year when the nitrogen is used.
Yeah, getting that balance right in the soil is such a big deal. And we see so many growers that believe they have high levels of potassium in their crop based on parts per million. But when we look at base saturation, we see that they're actually really low. And when you're overdoing nitrogen, this is something that we saw on our own farm years ago, where we just put on more nitrogen because the crop just didn't look quite right or didn't yield as much as we thought. And without good soil analysis, it's easy to do that because you do see some response putting nitrogen out in terms of greening up the crop and so forth. But if we're short on something else and get out of balance, like potassium, we can end up with those stock quality issues. So definitely don't want to do that.
Keep in mind, yeah, if you have adequate levels of, like, sulfur, for example, it's been proven that now your plant is much more nitrogen efficient. So you actually need a little less nitrogen when you do sulfur and these other nutrients right as well.
Hey, thanks for the questions, Alan. I really appreciate that. Thanks to everybody that sent in questions today. We had quite a few of them. We got some more that we'll try to get through on tomorrow's program as well. Thanks for listening to Ag PhD Radio. Be sure to join us again each weekday for our next show as well. Now, stay tuned for Shark Farmer Radio. It's coming up right after this.